Welcome to the May the Smoke Be With You podcast. And now here's your host, Joe Levitt.
Sit here, have some fun, learn about you a little bit.
You got it, Joe.
All right, well, welcome into this episode of the May the Smoke Be With You podcast. We are live from Decatur, Alabama. There's not a lot going on in Decatur, Alabama, but there is one barbecue hotspot that you're probably aware of, and that's Big Bob Gibson's. And we are here today with Chris Lilly. Chris is vice president and executive chef, I think, of Big Bob Gibson's, as well as a partner here, and kind of a big deal in the barbecue competition world. 17 world championships, is that right?
In the different meat categories, yeah, 17 world championships.
That's not bad. Not bad. And a four-time grand champion at Memphis in May. Is that right?
Let's count five.
Five. Oh, geez. Oh, Pete. You can't trust the internet all the time.
Exactly.
No, exactly. You can't. But five-time world champion at Memphis in May. The one and only Chris Lilly. Chris, thanks for having me here.
Good to be here, Joe. Thanks for making the trip down to Big Bob's in Decatur.
Yeah. Well, this is it's an iconic place. I'd love to just start with a history lesson of Big Bob Gibson's and kind of where this place started, because it's been around a hot minute. 1925?
1925, as a matter of fact. We are coming up on our 100th anniversary.
That's
for
crazy.
A family-owned barbecue restaurant. How about that?
That is amazing. So are you guys already planning what that's gonna look like?
Yeah, we're already looking ahead, because that's special. That's something
you don't often
see.
Get one chance at it.
Yeah, I think we can get some good publicity out of it. But more importantly, just celebrate the generations of the people who come before us. Mm. And, you know, what we've done so long, and some of the employees that have been with us for so long. I mean, there's a lot to celebrate, and it's more than me. It's more than us. It's more than, you know, Big Bob Gibson himself. You know, to last this long, it's a lot of people, and we're going to do
and
a whole lot of
city.
Celebrating.
I mean, it's this northern part of Alabama that supported you guys for that long.
Oh, a whole lot of support. You know, some of my favorite times during the years when the old timers, the customers come in that have been coming here, you know, for 50 or 60 years, you know, and back tell stories when Big Bob Gibson was, you know, young and just starting out and doing his thing in barbecue. So the old Big Bob Gibson stories, the old customer stories, that's sort of the best part of being around here, hanging out at the restaurant.
It's my second time here, and I believe the first time I was here, there was a table full of old guys that were sitting here just in the afternoon having some tea and pie, and just, like, it didn't look like it was the first time they had sat down and had pie and tea at this place. It sounds like it's probably a gathering spot for locals as well.
It is. If you look around the restaurant, you know, the front of the house, it's wide open, and that's done for a reason. Big Bob Gibson is a place where you know, people, whether it be tourists or people around the city, can come and just shake hands and see who's out and everything. It's a place for politicians. It's a place for ditch diggers. It's a place for doctors. It's a place for everybody just come together and you know, enjoy life and glad hands, shake hands with people they hadn't seen in a while. It's a meeting place of Big Bob Gibson's family, and that's the way we want to keep it.
Yeah. So 1925, why did this place start, and why here?
So Big Bob was he worked for L&N Railroad, and on the weekends he would cook barbecue in his backyard. And he figured out pretty quick that he liked cooking barbecue for family and friends more than they did working for the railroad. So I think it just grew, and, you know, more people started coming over his place in his backyard on the weekends, and finally he just said he can, you know, we can do this. And him and Mr. Woodall joined together and opened up the first restaurant back in the 20s and everything. And then Big Bob split off and started doing his own thing. So started in the backyard, just like with all of us.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way we learned to barbecue, and you know, it progressed from there.
And so how many generations deep is the family partnership here, ownership?
It's my wife's great-grandfather's Big Bob Gibson, so
okay.
We're fourth generation. My children, Jacob and Andrew, who are in the business, haven't talked my daughter into coming back yet. She's
okay.
In Dallas, but my two sons are in the business with me. I've got one at each location. They're fifth generation barbecuers.
Okay.
So, again, we've been doing this a long time. You know, Big Bob had five kids. All five kids went to the barbecue business. So we have got Big Bob Gibsons in Decatur. Two of them in the 50s went to Huntsville and opened Gibson's Barbecue.
Okay.
So we've been doing this a long time. And then there was Big Bob Gibsons and Little Bob Gibsons here in Decatur. So the whole family was cooking barbecue.
Okay.
So. But now, you know, after all these years, it's just down to Big Bob Gibsons in Decatur. So we're carrying on a family tradition for everybody.
All right, so you married into this operation, but where did you just like meet your wife and then decide you like barbecue, or was there already kind of a love of barbecue before you fell in love with your wife?
Well, I always liked cooking, and you know, I always remember my dad in the backyard with his charcoal grill, you know, grilling out and everything. I mean, some of my earliest memories were that. But as far as learning barbecue and knowing how to cook barbecue right, no, that didn't happen until I joined the team at Big Bob's. Met my wife in college. Actually moved to Franklin, Tennessee right out of college.
Oh, okay.
And I was up there, and I think Don just wanted my father-in-law just wanted his daughter a little bit closer. So he offered me a job to come back, learn the business, rest is history. It just felt right. It just worked. So something I fell in love with after the fact.
So, you said some of those earliest memories were, you know, barbecue in the backyard with your dad. What was he cooking? Was it... You know, and where were you born in? Born and raised.
I was born and raised in Florence, Alabama. So just about an hour here.
Yeah, yeah.
From here, still North Alabama, still right on the Tennessee River.
Yep.
A beautiful area of Alabama, you know, with the Tennessee River and the, you know, foothills and everything. So it's, you know, beautiful area. But Florence, born and raised there. And my dad was, if you know the PK grill, the cast aluminum grill, it was the old, you know, I think it started in the 50s and everything. Well, he had one. So that's what he had in his backyard, and it was Kingsford charcoal. And it was, you know, those PKs are a little low. So, you know,
you could
look right over and see, you know, and it was pork chops and hamburgers and a whole lot of direct grilling.
Yeah.
He was doing steaks and chicken and everything else. But
was he good?
He was good.
Okay.
As best I remember, he was pretty dang good. but I still remember the smells and the you know, the sight, the flames, the flavor, everything you get off of Kingsford charcoal and a PK grill. So it's a good combination.
And you're still a Kingsford guy.
I am. I've always used it. You know, my father used it. I used it. And I guess what really got me hooked is I started using it in competition and started winning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before I even had a relationship with Kingsford.
I almost wonder, is there like a sensory thing that almost happens to you? Like if you're firing up that charcoal, it could take you right back to that backyard looking over that PK grill with your dad, today.
I think it does. Think it does. And it's, you know, it's that smell, it's that flavor, it's the... You know, what I love and sort of my style of cooking is cooking, no matter if I'm cooking at a low temperature or high temperature, I like to cook directly over the coals.
Yeah.
So I like the fat rendering and dripping down on the coals. It almost gives you a charred moisture, an extra layer of flavor that you just can't get cooking totally indirect.
Yeah.
I just love that charred charcoal flavor that you get with the fat dripping directly on the coals.
Now, is that something that you do like at home direct, or is that something that you guys implement here at the restaurants, the more direct style of cooking?
A little of both, without a doubt. You know, if I have, depending on what I'm cooking on, of course, that dictates if I'm indirect or, you know, I've got a bunch of different grills I like to cook on.
I bet you do.
It really depends on what I'm cooking on that dictates that. You know, we do some direct fired here in the restaurant. We do, you know, I do it in my backyard. In a competition, I definitely implement sort of a lower temperature direct fired cooking style.
Yeah. So the competition side of things for Big Bob Gibsons, you guys, were they doing competitions before you came along and got involved in the restaurant?
They were not. We initially got our first trailer barbecue rig increase the amount of company picnics and things and caterings, outdoor caterings. You know, North Alabama, there's a huge amount of industry around here, you know, with the Redstone Arsenal and Huntsville and all your big corporations along the river and stuff like that. So there's a lot of opportunity to do, you know, outside catering and things like that. And that's initially why we got the rig. We entered a contest in Huntsville, Alabama, just on a whim, just almost to get the word out. Hey, look what we got. Look what we can do.
Look at our trailer. We can go anywhere.
Exactly.
We have a truck and a trailer. Look at that. We're big time.
Yeah. Have trailer, we'll travel.
That's
right. So that's why we did it. But then there was sort of an element of that competition, and we did really good, and, you know, it was sort of addicting.
Yeah.
In our second contest we ever entered, we won and got an automatic invitation to cook Memphis in May World Barbecue Championship.
Okay.
Back then, there was a circuit around.
You had to qualify.
You had to qualify.
Yeah.
So we qualified in our second contest ever, and got the paid entry. Back then, the contest would pay for your entry into the Memphis and May World Championship.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and then we were hooked. It was just like, what?
This is amazing.
Exactly. So we went in Memphis and May just big-eyed and didn't know what was going on. And we finished 10th place that year.
That's not bad.
Next year, we finished 5th place.
Okay.
Next year, we finished 1st place. And for the next 6 years, we finished first place in pork shoulder category with a couple grand championships. So,
and that kind of put you guys, like, definitely on the map. Like, you were known here, but that took just the notoriety in the barbecue world to another level.
Yeah, you know, we were early on, you know, a little bit before the big barbecue, you know, push and heyday. And, you know, back when we first started, I remember going up to New York City, and there were, you know, one or two barbecue restaurants in the entire city. And the barbecue was bad.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, but now you can go to, you know, New York and have some, you know, primo barbecue. And there's fantastic barbecue all over the place. But, yeah, back then it was, we were really well known in this area. You know, been here forever. You know, everybody knew Big Bob Gibson's. My father, he used to live in Memphis and went to Georgia Tech. And every time he would travel from Memphis to Georgia Tech, he would stop in Big Bob Gibson's. And he still remembers Big Bob.
Wow.
You know, back and forth from his trip. But, yeah, always well-known around here. But through competition, we sort of built a, you know, national platform where we could really tell people what we're doing down here and, you know, tell them about our barbecue style.
And competition started for you in what year? What year was that?
First competition was in 97, I believe.
Okay. So not too long ago. I mean,
right.
I mean it is, but I guess when you get to be our age, 97 just feels like a heartbeat away a little bit. A ton of success. You know, that's, you know, I've talked to some competition guys and gals, and, you know, they talk about sometimes it's the luck of the table, you know, that you can get lucky, get a good table. And they said, you know, everybody, what you want is everybody to just not one person at the table not to like your barbecue. Everybody has to like it. Not everybody has to love it. Almost that's kind of what you're looking for. But for you to have that kind of continued success, for you to win pork shoulder 5-6 years in a row at Memphis in May, to be world champion, you know, so many times over, like, that's not luck. That's not just getting lucky table after lucky table. If that was luck, then you need to be playing the Powerball on the regular because you're due to win it a couple times, I think. So what does it take, do you think, to have that kind of consistency and win at that level in competitions, at big competitions?
I think you can't get complacent. You know, you can't go in with that, you know, if you have success, you can't, you know, there's always room to get better. I'm learning something every day I come in. And I got to take that sort of idea when I do competition barbecue. I can't settle. Oh, we won last year. Let's just roll back the same thing.
Yeah.
There's always minor tweaks. There's always getting better. There's always listening and learning. I don't think you can be complacent. As soon as you do, there's 20 more teams out there that are going to put out a better product than you.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think you can. I try not to follow. I try not to say, oh, you know, well, what's winning out there? You know, maybe I can be more like them.
And if people probably did that with you. I imagine you were winning once, twice. They're like, hey, we need to go down, check him out. And now they're trying to imitate that flavor profile. and take it to the next competition.
I think that's what's happening all across competition barbecue. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I'm not saying, you know, everybody's trying to copy me, because there's not. Right. There's just so many great teams out there that are consistently good. And everybody's trying to, you know, emulate what they're doing.
They go take their barbecue class, and then they try to just do their same timelines and same recipes and do the things.
There's a lot of the same flavors and a lot of the same tastes and cooking techniques that are out there. But if you can stay ahead of the pack and tweak things. And you said it a little bit ago, you can't offend anybody, so you can't get too far out of the groove.
Yeah.
But you've got to do something to just set yourself apart without offending anybody.
Today's episode is sponsored by Tent Craft. Hey, attention barbecue comp teams, barbecue brands, and business owners of all kinds. If you take your show on the road, you need to make sure you are repping your brand with the best custom tent in the game. The folks at Tent Craft make their tents from the frame to the canopy, all in Traverse City, Michigan. This veteran-owned small business works with small brands like Little Ol' Me, all the way up to the big boy brands that you know and recognize. Listen, their tents will not be the cheapest, but they will be the best, and they back it with amazing customer service. The team at Tent Craft still believes in delivering a great product at a fair price and making it all from start to finish with American labor. If you want to see what the folks at Tent Craft can do to make your custom tent dreams come true, then reach out to them to get a free quote just like I did. Mention May the Smoke Be With You and get 15% off your custom tent. That's a great deal. Again, mention May the Smoke Be With You if you reach out to get your free quote, and you will get 15% off your custom tent. Go to tentcraft.com today to get started.
I saw just this week a little reel from Malcolm Reed talking about where the brisket flavor profile is going. That there's a ton of sauce on the brisket, that they're, you know, it's a really sweet, I think, brisket. For a lot of folks, myself included, my favorite kind of type of brisket is, give me a nice Texas, give me some salt, pepper, some oak, and let me have it. But that's not going to win in a competition at all.
I've tried it. It doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, whereas, you know, you might get 100 people walk through the door and 80 of them will be like, that's the best brisket I've ever had. But you've got a sauce, you know, and so, but he's saying that it's even gotten maybe a little worse with how sweet it's gotten on the brisket.
Yes and no. I think there you can cook a, you know, a salt and pepper brisket and do well.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to conform a little bit on, you know, on doneness and maybe your usage of sauce and everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think usage of sauce is, but I found in brisket, I think it works better for me if I do sweet sauce on the outside of the brisket, but then leave the faces. I think too much sauce on brisket, I think, can work against you,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. But yeah. I'm probably the wrong person to be asking about brisket. I'll tell you all about pork. Because I do one KCBS. I do the American Royal. That's the only contest I do as far as, you know, brisket. The four categories that I cook brisket. Yeah. So, yeah, if you want to talk competition brisket, you're talking to the wrong guy, you know. So I have won at the American Royal in brisket, though. It's been
that
a few
had to,
years.
That had
been
to
a
feel, years. Good, feel good, though.
It felt great. And it was actually on television. They were filming that year. So yeah, it felt really good.
I bet. What makes a, you know, you're one piece of that team. You know, when you guys go and you cook, what are those key points to just having a good team that can get out there and compete and win?
You know, I think everybody needs to be comfortable with each other and know their job. Mm. You know, you can't have any tension or head-to-head, you know, combat during the competition. You roll in with what you do, with what you know, with your plan. You don't change your plan mid-stride in there and you put it out. You know, you can't have two or three bosses in the kitchen unless each boss is assigned to each category.
Right.
And a lot of teams do that successfully.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to have a plan. You got to implement it. Now, there are things that go wrong in competition.
Sure.
You've got to adjust.
Yep.
But for the most part, you know, don't try out a bright new idea day of in the contest. It's probably not going to work.
Yeah, those Hail Marys don't work very often for a reason, you know.
That's it.
Yeah, that one play.
Yeah, try that in practice, you know. Yeah. And the, you know, cool thing about you know, us at Big Bob's is, you know, we cook barbecue every day. So, mm-hmm. you know, if I want to come in and, you know, change up an injection or a dry rub or a sauce a little bit and do some testing in house, I can do some testing in house.
Yeah. So. What are people going to taste when they come to the restaurant? How close will it be to that pork shoulder that is a world championship pork shoulder?
I like to describe it like this. So, you know, you judges, you've got to think that, you know, they'll take one or two bites to make their decision, mm-hmm. and they'll write it down. So our flavor profile in competition is exactly what we do at the restaurant magnified.
Mm.
It is the intensity and the richness of flavor is expanded for competition.
Yeah.
I've got to grab their taste buds, you know, just squeeze. I mean, I got to hit them.
Yeah.
Hit them hard.
Like, you've got two bites, like you said, at the most, more than likely.
That's it. So we run the same dry rub, same flavor profile here at the restaurant that we do in competition, but competition is a lot richer. It's something that, you know, it's not everyday barbecue. It's not a, you know, that you would sit down and eat a full plate of barbecue because it is rich.
Yeah.
But it's the same flavor profile.
Yeah. You know, you, we met for the first time in person at the Jack. We've corresponded a little bit, where you were a judge. What's it like for you to sit down as a guy who's been on the other side so many times, and now I know you've judged a lot of barbecue, but what's it like for you to sit down and judge those competitions, kind of knowing what those guys have gone through to get there? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what makes a great bite of barbecue for you as you're sitting there as a judge?
You know, I don't think I'm your... I don't want to say that. I was about to say I'm not your typical judge, but I guess because I cook, and because I've cooked for so long and have seen barbecue, you know, progress in the flavor profiles, ebb and flow, I think I'm a judge that respects what the team puts on the plate, and I'll judge it accordingly, and I'll judge it fair. And I am no means a harsh judge. Teams aren't going to get upset landing on my table, but I respect good barbecue, even if it's not something that just I absolutely just love.
Yeah,
I can respect where they're going and what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah,
you know, and if I can taste that and they execute that perfectly,
that's what you're judging.
Then
really.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, unlike a lot of judges, but there are some good judges out there. There are a lot of good judges out there. But, you know, if somebody puts a vinegar sauce, you know, on their pork, you know, there's some judges out there that would probably mark off because it's not the traditional sweet sauce.
Yeah.
But I can taste that. I can respect that. I can love that.
You can see through and know that this was cooked properly. I imagine when a box opens in front of you, you with your eyes, you almost can judge it. You know, you can look at it and go, okay, that was cooked properly. There's the right color. The consistency looks good. That's going to be sweet. That's going to be, you almost by looking, you just, the experience, the number of bites of barbecue you've had, the amount of you've seen, you can just almost do it by sight.
You can, but, you know, I still won't write down that tender score until I pick it up and eat it and everything else. But yes, you can. You know, you've been cooking barbecue long enough. You open the pit lid and look in. You can tell when something's perfectly done or when something's overdone. Yeah. You don't even got to temp it, taste it, you know, press it, mash it. You can look at it and see.
Yeah.
It's, you know, one of those things you've done. You've cooked enough. Oh, I can't even imagine how much barbecue I've cooked in my life, but you just know.
Yeah.
It's sort of weird, you know, especially when you're, you know, teaching people and talking to people about barbecue. There's a lot of stuff that I take for granted, or people that have done it as long as I have that take for granted that, you know, it just is, you just know it's done, or
right.
That's overdone, or yeah.
Yeah. Just by looking, you can tell. You know, this is, you mentioned earlier, it's a family affair here. talk about those dynamics. Like, what's that like day to day? You said your sons are in the business. What's that family dynamic like? What are the kind of the pros and cons? If somebody's out here and saying, I want to run a family barbecue joint. What's good and bad for Chris every day when he comes into the office?
There's very little bad. I will tell you that when you've got two smart kids that care about the business, that care about the tradition, that don't mind work. And I think that's the biggest thing. All three of my kids, they don't mind, getting dirty. They don't mind the pit room. They don't mind work and putting in hard work. It's a joy to come in. I've got one son at each of my restaurants. And I not only see them every day and see them perform and see them run a restaurant, but I also get to travel with them because I travel and do events and appearances and things all over the country, all over the world now. And a lot of times my boys get to go with me.
Yeah.
And so that's a blessing in itself. So I get to work with them. I get to see them. I get to travel with them to some very interesting, unique places. So my job's a dream.
Yeah. You know, not everybody can say that their kids don't mind hard work. What do you think you did that instilled that in them? Because that doesn't come, I don't think, naturally. I think it has to be taught. But what makes them show up to the restaurant and not mind that they have to go into the pit room, that they have to maybe clean out a grease trap, that they have to do these things, get their hands dirty? Because their last name's Lily. They're working at Big Bob Gibson's. You know, there could be some entitlement very easily if you weren't very intentional at some point about this.
I think it was less of what I said raising them and more of what I did. They saw how many hours I put in. They saw, whether around the house or at work, I didn't mind getting dirty and jumping in there. You know, I've done every job at the restaurant. They have done every job at the restaurant.
Yeah.
So I think that's a...
Have they done pie lady?
Yes. They know how to cook pies. They know how to cook pies. Great. In this business, you know, every day could be a different job. Tomorrow, today, I could be washing dishes back there,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
You know, you got to do what you got to do to keep the restaurant running. But yeah. Absolutely, they can do pies.
Mm.
I've seen them. Yes.
Yeah.
So I think I've instilled in them a work ethic by just showing them, you know, how I conduct myself and, just one of the workers.
Yeah. I love how you kind of lit up just saying there's nothing bad about it. You get to work with your boys. You get to see them perform at a high level. You see them do the work, put in the work. And by doing that, I'm sure earn the respect of the team that's here. Because I imagine that other operations, family operations, they're, an entitled kid comes in and trying to run whatever business it is, not just, barbecue. There could be, some team members that are just like, oh, here comes the boss's kid. But I imagine they were in and around the business for a long time, that this handoff seemed almost seamless, that it just made sense that your boys took over these restaurants.
Yeah, but one thing I wanted is when they graduated college, I wanted them to go out on their own for a year or two just to, I'm on my own. I'm doing my own thing. Mm-hmm. I'm working at life. I wanted to, one, make sure they could appreciate it, and two, make sure that that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Come back and, but that's what I encouraged.
Also,
you brought up a good point. You can really see how well somebody's doing by how the people around them, act towards that person.
Yeah.
So when I see my kids, running a restaurant, I look less at them and look at more of the people around them and how they react toward one of
the people rolling silverware. How do they react when your son walks up to them?
Yes.
Is there respect? Do they have a relationship? That's a key. I like that. You mentioned, one of the things you love about working with your boys is the experiences that you guys get to have together. You travel to a lot of really cool places. Let's talk about some of those locations, some of your favorite spots that you've been able to
take barbecue to, whether it's, you know, a great, you know, food and wine festival down in South Beach, or you know, some pretty cool places I think you've been able to go.
Yeah, well, we've got one coming up. Definitely going back to South Beach. South Beach Wine and Food Festival is one of my favorite events. I do it just about every year. I've done South Beach Wine and Food Festival more than any other chef.
Wow.
I was at the first bubble queue. There was five people on the beaches. It was barbecue and champagne on the beach bubble queue.
That's a great name.
Yeah, and I can't even remember. It's got to be close to, you know, 20-plus years that I've been going down. I've missed a few years, but going back this year, last weekend of February, I'm doing events. I'm hosting an event for South Beach. It'll be the last event of the weekend. It'll be a Sunday night. It's called Heritage Fire. It's a really, really cool event. So, yeah, that one's coming up. Got me a good trip to Vegas coming up with my friends at Kings for Charcoal. We're going to do an event there coming up. You know, I've carried my family to Ireland, to Australia, to Jamaica, just interesting places all over the world. Been doing a lot here lately with college football tailgates.
Yeah.
With a company called Copper Cane, which is a vineyards in Napa Valley. Got Bell Gloss and Bowen and Quilt and Elowen. So been doing a lot of cool promotion with them, and we're potentially working on a collab coming up.
With a wine, like almost like a barrel pick of yours kind of thing.
Regardless, it's a great company to work with. We've been doing college football tailgates. We've been pairing wine with barbecue. So we did Clemson Notre Dame this year. We did Florida Georgia this year. Last couple of years, we've done Alabama Texas. You know, just fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic games, good people, you know, good events.
Yeah.
Drinking wine and barbecue, that could be the worst place.
I tell you what, absolutely. Where did you go to school?
Went to University of North Alabama.
Okay, so you're a Lion.
That is good, yeah. Yeah, that's where I met my wife.
Okay.
That was the beginning of my barbecue story.
Yeah. Yeah, Florence, Alabama. It's a place that we've gone a few times with our family. There's a great little hotel there, a Marriott. We were talking right before we started recording, and we were walking around and found ourselves on that campus there. It's a beautiful little campus, and they have that lion enclosure, which is kind of crazy right there.
It's gorgeous. It gets bigger and better every time I see it, to be honest with you.
And downtown Florence is really a fantastic little downtown.
It is a funky, niche-y, vibey place. It is a cool place to be with the artists and the shops and the restaurants.
That's
where he's from. So that was number one Billy Reed shop, you know? So, yeah.
It's kind of crazy. One thing that I think we'd be remiss, obviously you're known here for your pulled pork. We're kind of known for something else here in Alabama and in at this place, and that's the chicken, the white sauce, the Alabama white sauce. Are you guys the originators of that?
We are. That was one of Big Bob's original sauces that he started using back in 25, or when he opened the restaurant in the 20s.
So it's been around that long.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, we've got some old newspaper clippings with like advertisements where he was throwing a big barbecue at like Sansui Caves around here. Like he was having a barbecue in caves before he opened his restaurants and everything. But it's two sauces. It's the barbecue chicken with white sauce, and then he did a sort of a Eastern North Carolina. It was the closest thing to it, is a vinegar based sop mop for his pork.
Yeah,
so white sauce for the chicken. And vinegar base for the pork, and those were his two sauces, and that's what he served: pulled pork shoulder and whole barbecue chicken with white sauce.
And Alabama white sauce is now it's an iconic barbecue style sauce. It's seen kind of everywhere. It's kind of like, you know, you go to, you know, Denver and you'll see Nashville hot chicken. You're likely to be in Denver and see somewhere an Alabama white sauce. That's got to be kind of a cool thing for, I mean, you probably wish you had royalties every time you saw Alabama white sauce on a menu somewhere. But it's got to be cool to know that has become almost its own genre of sauce, and you guys originated it.
It's actually neat. A lot of people say, oh, yeah, I bet you get pissed when you see the Alabama white sauce. You know, no, it's actually it's flattering. It's fantastic. Yeah. I've seen it in Chicago, char-grilled baby carrots with Alabama white sauce. I've seen it in Napa Valley, you know, at Gott's Roadside Grill.
Oh, wow.
With their white sauce on their chicken. I've seen it in Australia. I've seen it all over.
Wow.
New York, all over. So yeah, it's flattering. I like it. Yeah. I wish I'd trademarked Alabama white sauce, you know, years ago. But we always called it original white sauce because it was original white barbecue sauce. So it says on our label, Big Bob Gibson's original white sauce.
Yeah.
But it sort of morphed into Alabama white sauce because that's the origin.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you talked a little bit ago about you mentioned the movement of barbecue. Big Bob Gibson's obviously started in 1925, well ahead of this kind of renaissance of barbecue, where there's restaurants that pop up and just sell until they're sold out, or it's become this, you know, it's on TV. There's multiple shows, multiple contests about barbecue. What do you think it is that has made, you know, the past kind of 10 years or so ripe for barbecue to have the type of success and ride that it has? And I don't think it's necessarily peaked either. I feel like it's just kind of continuing to hit its stride and grow stronger.
You know, that's a great question, you know, and, you know, it's not in the last 5 years or 10 years. We really started watching, you know, seeing the barbecue wave probably, you know, 20 years ago. It's when we first started seeing, you know, and I can probably attribute that to the love and the attention that barbecue was getting on television even back then, you know, with all of your cooking shows and things. And barbecue was getting a lot of love. But then when it comes down to it, there's substance there. It's not just a fad. It's not just your latest, you know, it's grit and it's Americana. And there's so much substance there that I think barbecue was quickly adopted as sort of the, you know, the American food, that, you know, just the real authentic, the way we cook things here, you know, low temperatures, long period of time to get those tough cuts of meat, succulent and juicy.
Yeah.
Our style of cooking, American barbecue, is just quickly adopted as, you know, as you know, the American cuisine almost.
Yeah.
So it's just so much history and substance and grit, and it's just a lot there. And I think it's more of barbecue. I think it's a renaissance of you know, handcrafted, and the renaissance of, you know, you have these big makers festivals where it celebrates people that, you know, do things with their hands and things like that. I think there's just a lot of substance there.
Yeah, almost, you know, as you were describing that, this might be a too far of a leap, but I wonder if in society today, with as divisive as things can be, if barbecue almost remains this like source of like truth. Like, there's, you have to have fire. You have to have meat. You have to have spices. There's kind of, while there's multiple ways to do it, that it all starts kind of at one singular place, one singular point of kind of inception for barbecue. And people just know that they can, in a world that they can't trust anything, they can trust that the barbecue is made really ultimately in an act of care and love for that protein, whatever it is.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, barbecue as a whole is not limiting. Anybody can do it. Anybody can do it in their own backyard.
Yeah.
Anybody can be exceptional at it.
Yeah.
And you can base your entire day around it. It can become a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of a whole lot of other cuisines that can be a hobby that you would plan your Saturday or Sunday around.
Yeah. Well, you can. You can plan your Saturday or Sunday to go play golf and you know, waste 6 hours. And I enjoy that some. But, you know, your family doesn't really benefit from
that. Well, I mean, as far as cooking and cuisine, you know,
no,
I'm not going to plan my day around cooking a pizza on a Saturday, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And barbecue traditionally is community, it's family. You know, the best barbecues in the history of barbecue, you go back, it's when, you know, you take your whole animal or you take your big cuts and it's too much for one family, so you bring in the whole community or you bring in the entire family to celebrate with you, to, you know, to eat, to fellowship with you. Barbecue's community. It's bigger than... It's bigger than, you know, any other cuisine that I can think of as far as, you know, community and sharing.
Absolutely. I was having a conversation with Barrett Black from Black's Barbecue out in Texas. He's a fifth generation himself. And, you know, he was talking about this barbecue movement he was talking to. I believe it was his grandfather or great-grandfather. And this was probably... This was probably close to 10 years ago. They were having this conversation where it was just like he was just flabbergasted that there were these places that were opening up and serving until they were sold out. You know, opening at, you know, 10 and they could be sold out at 1:30 or whatever. And he didn't understand because he thought that the first and the last customer should have kind of that same experience. Do you think that Big Bob would kind of feel the same way if he saw kind of what had happened in barbecue and was like, what are these people doing? How do they need to serve everybody?
You know, Big Bob would like that style because he loved fishing. So
he'd be like, wait, you mean I can be done at two?
I can do both? So no, Big Bob would celebrate that.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, true story, when he did a deal with his daughter, that basically his daughter would come in and run the restaurant, and he had just in and out everything. And so, yeah.
Because he loved fishing
that
much.
When he got older, he did a deal with his daughter where his daughter came in and just ran the restaurant and everything, and he was just sort of in and out, did his own thing. So
I love that. You know, as you sit here today, obviously great operation, tons of accolades. You got your sons in the business. You know, if I look around, if I maybe compare you to like a great head coach in the NFL or in college, you know, one of the things that great coaches have is kind of this lineage of other coaches that come from them. I think you've got that here at Big Bob Gibson's. You've had some people come through here, Ken Hess being one of those who now is running his own really successful place. Up in Virginia. Are there others that have kind of come through these doors that have kind of gone on to do their own things as well?
I'll tell you this. It's actually a pretty neat story, and it's relevant as of last year. So years and years ago, I got a cold call one day from a chef in New York City, Shane McBride.
Mm.
And he was working for Tom Colicchio.
Yeah.
And white tablecloth, you know, fine dining chef that, you know, a lot back then, barbecue wasn't taught at CIA or any of the chef schools or anything. But there was this craving of, mm-hmm. you know, wanting to learn. So Cole called me one year, and him and another chef, Adam Evans, who worked for Tom Colicchio, and he was in Atlanta, came to Big Bob Gibson's, and we spent a few days and we cooked ribs.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole intention, we wanted to, you know, learn how to barbecue and everything. And a group of chefs that all worked under Tom got together, and they started cooking Memphis in May under the name Ribdiculous. Okay?
Great name. There's so many great
Fantastic
names.
Fantastic name. Yeah. Okay? So from there, last year, that team won the grand championship at Memphis in May with their ribs.
Wow.
Okay?
Amazing.
On top of that, now Shane is the partner in a restaurant called Pig Beach.
Yeah. Yep.
That has locations in New York, that just opened up in Louisville, Kentucky. It has a location in Florida.
Right.
And they're doing really great things with some great barbecue. Adam Evans now is in Birmingham, who has Automatic Seafood, who won Best Chef in the South, James Beard.
Wow.
So yes, I've had some cool people come through the restaurant. I've cooked barbecue with some fantastic people. And at the same time, they're wanting to learn barbecue. I'm wanting to learn what they know.
Yeah. So teach me something.
It's a great trade. Yeah. It's a great trade.
Yeah. Teach me the mother sauces. Teach me these things that make me a better home cook, that make me, you know, and some of those things will translate to this kitchen here. But then there's also just makes you a better overall chef. And when you go to do these food festivals and, you know, you can pull out some new tricks and
that's it.
Look really fancy when you put on that white chef's coat. You know,
I try to stay out of those.
Do they ever force you into them at some of these?
Of course they do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that wine collab, that's the look you have on that wine collab thing, I think is a chef's coat, isn't it? I think they...
you know, I think you might be right. Yeah, I think they forced me into that one.
I love that that's the legacy of this place living on in that competition team at Pig Beach. You know, it's really cool to see that it's not just staying here in Northern Alabama. Ken Hess is running a great place up there in Virginia.
Yes, he is.
And you know, you got him on the Kingsford. He's on the Kingsford train up there as well. Always talking about it.
He's a good guy. He's a talented guy too. Really knows food, and he's a trained chef as well.
Yeah, classically trained. Was up at the Greenbrier, I think, is where he kind of learned his first learned barbecue.
And the first time I met him, he did a big barbecue up at the Greenbrier, and it was a weekend barbecue school at the Greenbrier, and it was myself.
He brought you and Dr. Barbecue, is that right?
And Myron Mixon.
Yeah.
So we went up there, and all three of us did a weekend cooking class. How would that go over today?
Yeah. I think it'd go over real good.
I think it would, too.
I think
it would, too. And we had a ball. We had a good time up there. But that was a classic Greenbrier, and Ken pulled us in on that. Shortly after that, I hired him away from Greenbrier to come down here and work with us.
Yeah. And he was here for several years.
He was. He was. Yeah. Probably 7 years?
Yeah.
Maybe more. Something like that. Yeah.
We were talking again. We talked briefly about Ken before we got started. Also, Kevin Groh, who has cooked a lot, I think, with you at Big Apple Barbecue Fest, gone up there and been on your crew as you're injecting hundreds of pork shoulders up there. You know, he is what I refer to as my barbecue sensei. He was that guy who I was just kind of toying around, and I wanted to take my own backyard barbecue to the next level. And he was a guy who was further advanced than me. And so I remember the first time I kind of cooked ribs that he had sent me a recipe for, I probably called him, you know, 7 or 8 times during this, you know, 5-hour cook. You know, you had a sensei right here. You know, you were brought into the family business and you learned it that way. Were there people outside of the family that you kind of looked to and started to learn from, or was it pretty much just kind of apprenticing here and kind of learning the ways of Big Bob Gibson?
Definitely apprenticing here would be my main core of who influenced me the most. I learned under a gentleman by the name of Jerry Knighton. Jerry Knighton started barbecuing when he was 13 years old for Big Bob Gibson's.
Oh, wow.
When I started working
here. No child labor laws back then.
Big Bob Gibson had passed away when I started working here. He started working for 13 years old and worked his entire life in the barbecue business.
Wow.
And that's who taught me in the pit rooms. So himself and other gentlemen by the name of Steve Bullard, who worked about his whole life in the barbecue restaurant, he was back there as well, especially when we opened the new location. I got to work with him hand in hand for years. So definitely a lot of people in-house. You know, on the competition circuit, you know, that was, you know, 1997. But that was, you know, that was a long time ago. You know, most of your, you know, household competition pitmaster names were not cooking back then. But Mike Mills, Pat Burke are a couple that jump off. Interesting story. I was at my second competition. No, it was my, yes, it was my second competition. No, third competition, I think. But it was a one that we had already had the automatic to Memphis in May.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go and brush up and practice.
Yeah,
and
get a rep in. Yep. Yeah.
So we went to practice, and we pulled in, and I was cooking right beside Tower Rock, which was Pat Burke.
Okay.
And he cooked, and he won first place shoulder. I won second place shoulder.
Nice.
And after the combat, he knew I was green. He knew I was brand new and everything. He said, come on over here. So I went on over, and he said, here's my pork. Taste it.
Okay.
And I tasted it and instantly knew. I was blessed with a pretty good palate.
Yeah.
But instantly knew I would never, ever beat him unless I went back to the drawing board.
Wow.
And changed my flavor profile entirely. Not to copy him or match him, but just side by side. His was better.
Yeah.
His was better.
And you recognize that.
But I had something to shoot for. He gave me something to shoot for. A lot of teams wouldn't do that or won't do that.
Sure. Yeah.
But he gave me something to shoot for and to strive for. And so that's what I did.
I love that. I'm going to ask you what I think is a tough question. And I love that the restaurant is kind of starting to come to life here. We're here early. The noise in the background, I love. This could be a tough question. So I want you to put humility aside, okay? I'm going to put you on the Mount Rushmore of barbecue, okay? And right now you're probably like, I don't know, don't do that. But I'm going to put you up there. I would be curious who you think should be up there with you. All right.
I would definitely not put myself up there, but most of the other people that I would put up there, I would consider putting up there, are probably not alive today.
Okay.
You know, and it's probably not going to be a whole lot of competition barbecuers either.
Yeah.
I think
that's fine. Yeah.
I think my Mount Rushmore barbecue would be people who have dedicated their whole lives to cooking barbecue, probably in the restaurant industry. I would have to think about it a while, but most of those people would be the people who basically built the platform and the foundation where I can do my thing, and some of the other guys. I'll tell you right now, Big Bob Gibson, he would be one of those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Or one of those people I would put on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, even as you said that, you know, I think, you know, I look at somebody like maybe Tootsie out at at Snow's, you know, who just has spent her whole life making barbecue, has been so instrumental to letting women know that they can do this and they can do it, you know, at an extreme level, and just people like that. I think there's folks that I, you know, contemporaries, and I think you're one of them that I view as kind of an ambassador of barbecue, a guy that, you know, you get called to all these food and wine festivals because you're an ambassador for the movement, and I think that but I love your answer that it would be people that maybe aren't the known people, maybe not the ones doing the Good Morning America TV appearances and those kind of things, but the folks that are just doing what they can to make barbecue better each and every day, or did, you know, back in the day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to finish up with a little bit of just a kind of bonus round material here. So, first, I've enjoyed our time together. It's been great. Love hearing your story, hearing about Big Bob Gibson's. Obviously, May the Smoke Be With You has a little bit of a Star Wars theme to it. You know, we pay homage to it. Are you a Star Wars fan? Did you grow up a Star Wars fan?
I did. I've sort of gotten lost in all of the latest stories and
there's a lot. There's a lot going on. Isn't there?
There is a whole lot.
Yeah.
But yes, I grew up a Star Wars watcher and a Star Wars fan. I sure did.
Favorite movie?
Who? Oh gosh. Oh gosh, you almost got to go back with the original. There's been some, and I think a lot I sort of get the some of the names confused on which episode, you know?
Right, yeah, episode, yeah.
Yeah, like, exactly, you know, and I'm liable to, like, say one that I think it's this one.
Is Star Wars, you know, what we call Star Wars, now they call it A New Hope, you know, is it the original, or is that, where is that in the trilogy?
Yeah.
You know, is it Empire Strikes Back, or, you know, whatever, yeah, so...
There were some good ones there in the middle, sort of early on, but and then there were some duds. The one with Jar Jar Binks, that's a dud.
Yeah, not a fan.
Okay,
yeah,
all right, yeah. So we're on the same.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, one of my least favorite, I would say. Yeah,
but some of the old school, you know.
Hard to beat.
Yeah.
Hard to beat. Favorite character, maybe?
I got to go with Han Solo.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You like his swagger?
I do. I like. I think he added so much to the, you know, to Star Wars.
Yeah, I think having a swagger and barbecue is important too. You know, just a little bit. You know, and there's a fine line. You know, I think there's a fine line between just having a swagger and knowing that what you cook is good, knowing what you cook, you know, can win, and then, you know, acting like, you know, that is it. But there's, you know, just a little swagger helps.
Swagger sells. Yeah. It definitely does. But yeah. It's, yeah, yeah. Some people invent swagger, though.
That's right. Yes. Some people don't deserve the swagger that they pretend to have.
Oh, that's fun.
What kind of music do you listen to?
I like singer-songwriter. Listening to a lot of like Tyler Childers right now.
Okay.
So a lot of just easy listening, you know, acoustic singer-songwriter stuff.
Yeah. First time Tyler Childers has been mentioned here on the podcast. But
is it really?
Yeah, but I'll be sure to let him know that he was mentioned. That's fantastic. If you are, and I support that as well. I'm a country music fan, more classic country, but I love when I get to sit in a songwriter round, when these guys that have written the songs, when I hear the guy, you know, Wynn Barbel, who wrote Waiting on a Woman, I would much rather hear him sing it than Brad Paisley any day. Love Brad Paisley, but just to hear the story behind it, the guy who wrote it, so powerful.
Oh, absolutely. They've got we've got a local Princess Theater in town, and they've got a singer-songwriters event that they really small, you know, that they, you know, only sell so many tickets, and it's in a small room and dark, and it's just a stage and acoustic guitar, whatever they want to play. But it's more it's the songs, but it's the stories on why the songs were written and what headspace they were in when they wrote the song and everything. I'm like you. I would rather the singer-songwriter.
And you also don't have to fight the traffic.
Yes.
You know, there's very, very rarely traffic coming from a singer-songwriter night.
Yeah.
Again, so that's the old man in me that doesn't like people in the left lane on the interstate.
There you go. That's my jam as well. I want to chill when I'm listening to my music, and, you know, whether that be in the car or at a concert.
Agreed.
But I like old country. I like, I like 70s rock and roll.
Yeah.
I like the new, you know, folk singer-songwriter stuff.
Yeah.
Country-ish.
Yep. Sorry, if you're at home and it's a weekend and you're out there cooking, you know, what are you drinking? What's your kind of your drink of choice?
Oh gosh. Well, I would love to invite you over sometime to my cellar, which is in my basement of my house, but it is a healthy bourbon and wine collection.
Okay.
I've got to go with one or the other.
Okay.
So,
let's talk about some favorite bourbons. Give me top maybe two or three that you love.
And a lot of that sort of comes and goes a little bit on what I'm drinking now, but here right now, the last three I've had, one of my favorites is Russell 13.
Okay.
Russell 13 is just strong. It is so good. I'm sipping on a OKI rye blend right now that is exceptional. Mm. As everyday, E.H. Taylor Small Batch is just so solid every time you open it up, and you know what you're getting.
Yep.
So that's another winner that I'll pick up a bottle whenever you can find it nowadays.
But, yeah.
You know, staying in that, you know, affordable that you can get range,
right.
Those are a few
there. Sure, there's some out there that you can just go and pay secondary prices for and sip a Pappy or whatever, and that's fine. But
yeah, so that's a few right there. I could
like
go on and on and on, but...
Now, when it comes to wine, are you red wine, white wine?
Depends on, it's a mood thing.
Okay.
You know, it's definitely a mood thing. It depends on if it's summer or if it's winter or what I'm eating or, you know, and that changes up, you know. So, you know, I'll get home from work on a, you know, summer afternoon and will not hesitate to grab a Chardonnay or Rosé just to sort of chill and mellow out. But, last bottle I drank was a Belle Gloss Dairyman Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
which opened yesterday. So
yeah.
So yeah, it sort of ebbs
I like
ebbs
Dairyman.
And flows.
Yeah, that's good.
It's fantastic, yeah.
All right. Is there anything you haven't cooked yet?
There is a lot of things that I haven't cooked, but not many.
Yeah. Anything that's on your radar still that you're just like, man, it'd be really fun to do that?
I think I want to cook like a whole lamb. I've never cooked parts and pieces, but yeah. I want to do a, you know, spit-fired whole lamb. Something okay. like that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, for sure. My wife always wants to know this. Give me a time when something went really wrong. Like, you know, like just when Chris Lilly wasn't Chris Lilly and the environment, whatever it was, just a barbecue blooper if you have one.
My biggest barbecue blooper that I recovered from. Okay, because that's what you got to do when you're in barbecue. I was cooking a huge event in Sonoma County.
Okay.
For Microsoft.
Okay.
And it was a NASCAR event out there, but it was Microsoft at the Sonoma racetrack out there.
Yeah.
So I was doing a breakfast lunch on race day.
Okay.
So when you're traveling from Alabama to California, you've got to source absolutely everything. So sourced yeah. absolutely everything. I got there in time, did all my pre-prep, you know, rented out a kitchen, got equipment out there. And the equipment that I found was a, I think that was a Southern, no, it was an old Hickory rotisserie. And got it out there. And when you're working and doing breakfast and you've got to time everything.
Yeah.
You know, my pork butts come off.
It's this like a time competition.
My ribs go yeah, this time yeah. my chicken goes on this. So you're filling every square inch. Well, we put all our big cut meat on like Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And everything prepped out, great shape, went back to the hotel room. So the old Hickory's our rotisserie, mm-hmm. gas assist with the, you know, electric rotisserie and yep. everything. Well, in the middle of the night, mm. a security guard comes through and saw that a generator was running.
Oh, no.
And he said that shouldn't be running, so he'll just cut it off. So he just cut the generator off and shut down my cooking process for the entire night. So when we get there at 5:30 in the morning, 5 in the morning, whatever time we get there, nothing was done.
Oh, no.
And you're cooking for Microsoft.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
about 150, 200 people.
Yeah, big client, sure. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
So it just throws everything in chaos. Pork wasn't done, so pork can't come off. So you can't put ribs on. You can't put chicken on. You can't, you know, and it just threw.
Oh, my.
Well, it just so happens I had a pizza oven there. So we did breakfast service out of that pizza oven, cooking bacon at like 800 degrees.
Doesn't
in like,
take long.
Oh, 15 seconds, 10 seconds, biscuits were about, I mean, in and out,
yeah,
as,
yeah.
you know, as quick as you can turn them and get them out. But we did the entire breakfast service out of a 900 degree pizza oven.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I've never tried bacon out of a pizza oven. It might be a really quick way to do it.
Oh, it is quick. It is quick. But, yeah, you got to do what you got to do. But they never knew it front of the house. In service, they never knew it, but it was, whew.
That's a good story.
It was something else. It was. It tested everything that I ever prepared for,
yeah.
didn't prepare for.
Did you meet the security guard?
No, I did not. I did not. But I got some bonus points because it was the all of the people with NASCAR that were there. Knew what
they
I was.
They saw you hustling, saw they, you.
Yeah. So,
probably got you another gig or two.
I actually regularly do one-off events every year for NASCAR, working directly with NASCAR and usually feeding, you know, sponsors or team owners or drivers or things like that. Some of them are really small, some of them are large, but I've cooked NASCAR events at Homestead, Daytona, Talladega, Martinsville, Sonoma. So that's one of my regular gigs that I do
nice.
Here and there every year.
That's great. Well, man, this was truly an honor. I appreciate you taking the time. Loved hearing your story. Let's hear what's maybe next for Chris and Big Bob Gibson. You kind of mentioned you got some events coming up. Anything else people need to know about, and how can we follow you?
Okay, it's Chris Lilly Barbecue on any of the social media networks. Okay. Yeah, Chris Lilly BBQ. And right now, it's, you know, I'm getting old. We talked about this and everything. I'm tired, but still having a great time.
Yeah.
And want to keep that up. So I think if from here on out, it's about me supporting my sons.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, what do you want to do? Where do you want to carry Big Bob Gibson's? You know, is it another location? Is it, you know, content doing what we're doing here?
Mm-hmm.
I think that is sort of next, me supporting the boys. But I'm not going to stop all my good travel. I've learned how to say no, okay?
I've learned
how to say no to a lot of things, but I say yes pretty easy, too, if it's where I want to be and who I want to hang out with. I've learned over the years that I'm going to point my life. If I don't enjoy what I'm doing, if I don't enjoy the people I'm hanging out with, and if I don't enjoy where I'm going or where I am, I don't do it.
Yeah.
It's not about the money or anything anymore. It's about who I want to spend my time with and who I want to hang with. So I'm in a good place right now. So you can expect me traveling, you know, here and there all over the country and, you know, doing some charity events, doing some food and wine festivals, definitely doing some catering, some corporate events and things like that. But if I'm there, it's where I want to be. Just know that.
Well, I appreciate it. And thanks for being here. Well, I know I'm here with you, but thanks for making the time. It's truly an honor. Humbled that you did it. Thanks a lot for your time.
Joe, it's where I want to be.
I appreciate it. May the smoke be with you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the May the Smoke Be With You podcast with Joe Levitt.